My name is Tyler Fornes, and I am one of the co-hosts of the Good, the Bad, and the Hungy AEW podcast here on the Voice of Wrestling Podcasting Network. We take a broad scope approach to the world of All Elite Wrestling and the entire universe of Tony Khan. We talk about the big matches, the big stars, the promos, the storylines, and we also look at it from a big picture perspective. How are things going to change over the course of the next 10 years with AEW still in the picture? How are companies like WWE going to adapt and adjust to AEW? Are they going to be a similar way like they did with WCW in the late 1990s? Will there be a counterpunch? We talk about all of that and more on The Good, The Bad, and The Hungy every week on the Voices of Wrestling Network.
This podcast is a member of the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. Visit voicesofwrestling.com to hear the rest of our great podcasts, as well as show reviews, columns, opinions, and updates across the world of wrestling.
Welcome back to another episode of The Good, The Bad, and The Hungy here on the Voice of Wrestling Podcasting Network. My name is Tyler Fornes. With me, as always, is Fred Moreland, who is curious what caused this other than his own actions. How are you, sir?
I'm doing well. How are you?
Not bad. Not bad at all. And we have a lot of interesting things to talk about, but you have something weird to discuss to begin the show. So I'm going to give you the floor, sir.
Yes, I need you to watch a video. This is a visual medium course. But I became aware of this clip because of a little thing Paul Scheer did. He's very funny. Co-host of How This Get Made and the much more serious Unspooled, if you like movies. But I need you, and if you're at home, just go to YouTube and look for it's Sneak Peek, A Hand with a Mind of Its Own, 911. It's a preview for that over the top drama show ABC has, and I need Tyler to watch this video. So we're gonna, if you want to pause, line it up and come back, we're gonna get it going here. Tyler, are you ready to watch this preview for 911?
I'm ready.
All right, I'm gonna count us down. So 3, 2, 1, play. This is on broadcast TV, as we just went silent for 30 seconds there. Really good audio.
Oh my gosh. It's Alien Hand. I remember learning about this in school.
Yeah, it's they're having a guy do Alien Hand Syndrome. It's very ridiculous how they're doing it. He has just been informed he may be having a stroke. And then it started choking a paramedic. And then is grabbing another man's testicles. I'm mildly surprised that this has not been a wrestling gimmick. Mainly like during either the 90s or the real down period of the aughts in WWE.
Oh, you know who would have been perfect for this gimmick? Eugene.
Oh God.
Like know how bad the Eugene character was, but just
for it is on that level. That's why I think it would have happened then, is because that's when Eugene happened.
So I know what Alien Hand is because we spent like almost a week discussing it health class. Yeah. Alien Hand is freaking weird, man.
It is weird. I can't imagine like devoting any time to it in high school just because it's like
no, this was middle school. This was middle school. Mr. Meshuggah's health class. A few other
things you should be covering in that. I mean, granted, if I was a middle school,
it was either Meshuggah or Severson. I don't remember, but that part is not important.
Go down that route.
Absolutely wild. What Alien Hand is basically, it does have a mind of its own, and it will just do things, and you can get choked out from your own hand. It's incredible on so many levels. But yeah, oh gosh, that was hilarious. And I'm glad we spent 4 minutes of our podcast on a visual medium.
Look, if Joe and Rich can do like a whole hour on buying and selling cars, then I'm going to devote the first 5 minutes to our show about this ridiculous over the top clip of that 911 show is insane. Have you ever watched that? I've only seen promos for it.
911. No, I have not watched it, but I've heard it's good. Peter Krause is awesome.
I have no interest in watching it because it just looks so awful, but it is bonkers. Just like, let me pull up a list. It moved from Fox to ABC. That's interesting. You don't seem to see that too much anymore. Okay, I got to read some episode summaries to you real quick. A failed rescue from a roller coaster leaves Buck traumatized. Athena and Hen respond to a devil dog attack, which Athena later discovers is actually a home invasion. Abby makes an on-the-phone connection with Buck. Athena arrives home and finds that her daughter is overdosed. There is so much happening in a single episode of the show.
Incredible.
Yeah.
Incredible. We need to talk about something more incredible than this, Fred.
I don't know that we can, but yeah, let's try.
We're going to. And it is Keeper of Kayfabe, Tony Khan. 1 week after taking the TK driver from Matthew and Nicholas Jackson, he, during the entire NFL draft, wore a neck brace and then did not travel to Winnipeg for television. And he makes an appearance on NFL Network with the neck brace on, talking about the vicious attack. And before we get to some of the other comments, I just got to say, bravo. Thank you. This is just old school wrestling, and I love it. It's tremendous. Like, thank you.
Yeah, it's it was a hell of an angle. I actually really did like that on the Dynamite where Tony Khan got beat down. Apologies if there is a fan noise in the background. I've turned on a fan because I'm in the hottest room of my house and I'm burning up. So it's just, you're going to have to deal with it. It's a bad audio podcast. It's just part of our brand. But yeah, I love that. And then he's wearing the damn neck brace for the entirety of the NFL draft weekend, where he's a key player in the Jaguars picks. And it is 911 level, riding or something. And then he got himself in a little, I wouldn't say he got himself in trouble with some people that are very quick to defend WWE at all costs. Thought he got himself into some trouble. That's my take on it.
So the best part was the shots in the Jaguars war room had him with the brace on. So it wasn't just when he made a television appearance. He was wearing it. Oh, tremendous. But then he went on NFL Network and took a big shot at WWE. And said they are like the Harvey Weinstein of wrestling, which that's a fascinating comment under a lot of circumstances. And you can take it a myriad of ways. So let's kind of talk about them. One, you can deem it very offensive because from an outside perspective, there are a lot of good people that work in WWE who aren't like that. But this isn't a shot at them. This is a shot at how the company runs in aggregate. And when you look at
the founder syndrome of Vince McMahon.
Mm-hmm. And when you look at everything with the Janelle Grant lawsuit and all the stories you've heard about Vince McMahon and the NDAs and the constant, I don't know the right terminology, but there's
accusations
that a culture of sexual misconduct.
Oh yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
And yeah, that fits. And then you have Vince McMahon literally hiring the same PR firm as Harvey Weinstein. Now, I think the reason why he's hiring the same PR firm is for the same reason why Weinstein hired them in the first place, to, you know, positive PR and spin this in the proper way. But look, it's not a good sign when you're being linked directly to Weinstein, who was accused of an egregious amount of sexual misconduct and using his power in an abusive manner. So, I mean, I don't think that the accusation is necessarily unfair, and I completely support shots across the board in wrestling, because if you're going to be like, oh, Triple H can make shots, but AEW can't because you shouldn't be punching up. No, you should absolutely punch up.
Yeah, like, the rule is don't punch down. You know,
Take shots. Take shots.
Yeah.
Is this the right one to take in the right context? You can argue it's a no, but I'll tell you what. I thought it was great. And the NFL Network guys were left speechless. They did not know how to react.
Oh, they wanted out. They wanted that out of that situation ASAP.
They had no idea what was coming. And
I'm just mildly surprised that there wasn't like a, you know, a parachute deployed. Reese Davis trying to dive out the window or something.
That's ESPN, but your point stands.
Yeah, I forgot who it was. So.
Tremendous. Absolutely tremendous content and how this ended up kind of working out. But holy crap, was this something, man.
Yeah, it was
absolutely something.
Tony didn't mess around here. Look, there's been more than enough accusations against Vince McMahon over the years to be very dubious of his morality, I think would be the polite way to put it. And honestly, like, WWE is a textbook case of founder syndrome, you know, because it's always been about Vince ever since this, you know, since he took over. So, like, getting offended that, you know, Tony Khan drew a parallel between the two is a little, you know, let's not be too precious here, right? You know, let's not fool ourselves as far as, you know, how the lines are drawn and so on and so forth in this situation. But yeah, I thought that it was a very entertaining appearance. And, you know, also the past couple of weeks, there's been a lot of shot taking between the two sides. So I don't think that we should be, you know, in general, too surprised by all this. So there's some, you know, you could argue it's a receipt or whatever, but, you know, they're just going to keep sniping at each other because they're competing. And, you know, WWE has traditionally and continues to really be very anti-competition. Now, I do want to bring up something to you along those lines, although I may have just forgot exactly what I was thinking of. It just left my mind. I just went blank, Tyler. I had a really good transition there. But we did have, like, Triple H going out of his way to take a shot at Will Ospreay, saying he didn't want to grind, which is a preposterous idea. Then Kevin Nash, of all people, came out to knock Will Ospreay for not wanting to work more dates. Kevin, that's the biggest, like, betrayal I could think of in wrestling. Kevin Nash should be congratulating him on accomplishing that goal. You know, more money, less dates. That's the Kevin Nash way. There was I was going to bring something up and I totally just forgot. I forgot to write it down earlier too. So this show is off to a hot start, Tyler. Between the 911 bit. Yeah, it's really good audio. I'm an excellent podcaster.
Hey, you know what? We are an excellent and 100% professional podcast.
Yes.
Look, shots like this are good on an overall level. Shots like this can open eyes. And look, I'm a big fan. I think this is honestly great for business. I think this is something where, like, did he maybe go too far? Sure. I think you can argue that. I don't think that's necessarily unfair to talk about, but at the end of the day, who cares? Who cares?
Yeah, I can't get myself been out of shape over this. I mean, if you didn't want to have people say, if you didn't want them to make that line about WWE or use that line about WWE, then maybe you shouldn't have, you know, WWE shouldn't have gotten named in this lawsuit. You know, maybe there shouldn't have been a situation where this lawsuit, you know, the actions that allegedly happened. I just don't have any sympathy for that. But what my smooth transition was going to be, which I blew, but we're going to have to do it anyway, is I wanted to get on to from there to the PR discussion that that really Joe Lanza has been pushing really hard and doing a great job leading, I think, online and drawing a lot of eyes to. is how WWE's really outclassed AEW for, you know, for outreach, for public relations, for getting information out to the media and getting them to report that very friendly information, and often not even like say who it's from. You know, they got that going on. And I will say that at the same time, AEW's PR is really kind of weak. And I can only speak to it from our perspective as a AEW-centric podcast. We're on the Voices of Wrestling Network, which isn't small, right? You know, Lanza always says, you know, we're too big to be small and too small to be big, which I'm fine with.
You know what? I think MJF would call that mid.
Okay, fine. So we're a mid podcast. We're the bottom of the rung podcast on this network. And but you know, I figured, all right, I will email the PR people at AEW and say, hey, can we get on your mailing list? Just to like whatever you send out. And they never acknowledge it. And it's wild to me that they wouldn't just be like, all right, let's get these dummies on the bottom of this email list so we can be like, oh, Turner ratings are really good this week. Da 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 da. Mm-hmm. And it's just very interesting to see, because I don't know if we are hosting a WWE podcast that is frequently, you know, pro WWE, you know, in this flipped universe, because we enjoy the AEW product. I think we've been quite critical of it over time at various points where we thought it deserved it. But at baseline, you know, we enjoy watching AEW. We think it's a fun show. We enjoy following the promotion. So if you flip that around, I would have to think that Chris LaGentle would be sending us some emails being like, oh, here's some cool facts that you can report without mentioning our names. And I don't know. It's an interesting contrast to think between those two things.
Yeah, I can understand. And this comes from my work in the National Football League, where I am currently working on trying to get access in the Minnesota Vikings building so I can do my job on a different level. I've worked for USA Today. I've worked for Sports Illustrated. I've worked for NBC Sports, and I currently work for the Sporting News. So it's not like I'm writing for a rinky-dink blog. I'm writing for incredibly professional organizations, and I'm having a lot of difficulty still trying to get into the building. So when I see that from the NFL perspective, whereas a lot of people in my shoes in with other NFL teams are able to get in no problem. And I find that different. I find it interesting. Seeing AEW limit their access like that, where we can't even get on a mailing list. And because we're critical, I think it's probably because we're the Voice of Wrestling, because, I mean, Joe and Rich don't get invited to the media calls anymore. They've talked about that live on their show. Mm-hmm. And I think because we have that association, we're not going to get on that mailing list. And that just kind of is what it is. And it really sucks, because we have absolutely no problem giving praise to the product, and we defend
when it deserves it. Yeah.
Yeah. We defend the ratings when everybody is just so down on them. Like, they're top five. Like, how can you be mad at these numbers when they're top five across all cable platforms,
you know, at this point in time, is the top five aspect.
People just watch less TV. And I think you have to get over that hump as an analyst. You have to get over that hump as somebody who tries to consume media and tries to understand how this process works. Look, WWE has a 40-year advantage in the marketplace. It has a 40-year advantage on television. So there is a huge, huge lineage of people who've been watching WWE their whole lives and have been like grew up with WWE. AEW's been around 5 years. It's not just as simple as like, hey, wrestling fans will just drive over. Well, a lot did, and they've stuck around. And if you want some more data, Jesse Collings, Voice of Wrestling, published a fan survey where I think he got nearly 2,000 responses from people who watch AEW, or even people who don't necessarily watch AEW, and tried to understand what they like, what they don't like, and tried to look at some of that data. And the majority of people have been watching since day one. So they've like kept, like based on this relatively decent sample size, they have kept a lot of their audience. The problem is gaining new audience, because people think that WWE is the only way to do professional wrestling, because they have been the only ones with massive exposure in this marketplace. And then if you look at TNA, TNA was basically WWE light. So you weren't even getting a true competitor, a true alternative, which is what this is. This is, has a lot of roots in Mexico, a lot of roots in Japan, a lot of roots in like British strong style. Like, this is a true alternative. It is not WWE. And I don't think enough people, just in some conversations I have with wrestling fans who are either not a super fans of the product or kind of agnostic, it's they don't like it because it's not the way WWE presented it. And I will admit, when I first started branching out in my wrestling watching, because I grew up in a house that did not have high-speed internet. And my parents still don't have great high-speed internet. It's just kind of one of those things. And when you look at how accessible wrestling was then, it was very difficult for me to really get involved into anything non-WWE until, I don't know, like, I also just didn't have the knowledge base of it. Like, I didn't really get into, like, New Japan until I heard of Kenny Omega versus Kazuchika Okada got 6 stars in the Tokyo Dome because I was scrolling Twitter and I saw Meltzer gave it 6 stars. I'm like, what? Can you do that? So I'm like, okay, I need to watch this thing. And I'm like, this is, like, the greatest thing I've ever seen. And it opened a world to me that I never really understood or had a lot of access to. And I went in with a relatively open mind, but when I started watching New Japan, it took a minute because the way they present everything, the way they do things, there's no in-ring promos. And it's match to match to match to match. And that kind of style was just so foreign. And when you have something that's so different, a lot of people can get turned off. And they can be like, okay, this isn't what I know. I don't want it. And like when you're a kid and you eat food, like, oh, this isn't the way mom makes mac and cheese. I don't want it. Oh, but it's good. It's homemade. No, I want Kraft. Like it's that concept. It's that construct. And I think people need to get over that, but it's going to continue to take a long time.
Yeah,
we're going to be able to look back, Fred, if we're still doing this show in 5 years, how much of a jump AEW has made with some of those people. Because it's proven to them that they are a long-term play. They're not going anywhere. And because of those reasons, I think it'll help. And plus, right now, they're establishing new stars. We can talk all we want about how Kazuchika Okada and Will Ospreay are the biggest stars in the world. Well, they're not the biggest stars in America. And I think that is a huge caveat as to why ratings are having a little bit of a doldrum right now. Plus, people just aren't watching television. That doesn't help either. So there's so many little things about this product that people just need to wrap their heads around that just hasn't happened yet. And I'm not really concerned about ratings. I'm not really concerned about the long-term play. But from a PR standpoint, that all ties in here when you talk about ratings, when you talk about the true alternative. All PR says is like, we're an alternative. Why? How? What is different about your promotion? And why are you doing it this way? Are you, like, we always talk about Mid-South Tony. Well, what did Mid-South do? And why are you trying to emulate it? Why are you trying to be different than WWE? What makes the little things that you do different better? Why isn't that a huge talking point? Why aren't you hearing when you're going to, like, towns? Like, I do a lot of Viking stuff for a company called Score North, and they get an AEW wrestler or two every time that they come to the market. Why aren't you using those people to talk about why your product is so different? Why this is what we're doing? No television product ever has consistently put on 4-star matches every single week. We are. If you love watching wrestling and those storylines being built in more to the matches and a little bit less with promos, you're going to love our product. Well, we still do promos, but the stories are told in the ring with the wrestlers. Well, why aren't we hearing that? And the PR strategy from this company is baffling on so many levels because they could be doing so, so, so much more without really having to do a lot of extra effort. And it's frustrating. Stop acting like the Vikings. Act like a champion. Act like you are in first place and you are trying to stay there. And they're not just not doing that.
Yeah, I just thought it was interesting to kind of look at that and think about it, you know, from our point of view, because, you know, here we is And I think I got invited to one Ring of Honor press conference, but they invited me the day before it, and I was driving up to Cincinnati that day, so no go there. But yeah, I don't know, man. It's an interesting contrast, and I would have thought for sure that AEW would be more proactive in seeking out that kind of positive treatment or coverage or whatever. So, but I don't know. Interesting to look at, I reckon.
Oh, it's 100% interesting to look at, and I'm glad we kind of took some time to have the conversation, because having the conversation right now is half the battle. Like, it's these guys are putting their own detriment on things, and they could be doing so much more without really doing a lot of extra effort.
Yeah, definitely. So I don't know. I am curious if, you know, we'll be seeing a shift in the AEW strategy. And like, this isn't about me. Like, I don't need marketing emails. You know, it's just interesting that I have tried to get them and I, you know, did not. And I don't know.
Yeah, maybe I'll try and tell them that I am with the Sporting News, and we'll see how that goes.
Well, we got some health updates to go through. First of all, Dax Harwood had a concussion at Dynasty, but he says he's recovered from it. And they did a physical angle this past Wednesday on Dynamite / Rampage, because they're kind of crossed over there. Julia Hart had shoulder surgery, and I have to imagine we're not going to see her for about half a year at a minimum. It's, you know, the shoulder is difficult to recover from a surgery on, relatively speaking. So maybe a bit. Powerhouse Hobbs injured his knee pretty obviously in his match with Jon Moxley a couple weeks ago. The reports are that it was significantly injured and he is going to need surgery. So again, I would be kind of shocked if we see Powerhouse Hobbs again before the end of the year, which is a damn shame because he was having a very nice run with the Callis family. Comings and goings for AEW. First of all, Ethan Page is done with AEW. There's a report that he actually wanted to head out a few months ago, but they kept him under contract till the end of it. Best of luck to him. I've always found him very interesting because I feel like he's a guy that should be much more successful than he is. And, I think he's fairly charismatic. He's able to cut a good promo. He's a good heel, I think. He's a good worker, but it just somehow never added up. The Men of the Year with Scorpio Sky was a big flop, I feel like. And Ethan Page just never recovered from that. His best work in the company was basically whenever he got to throw Darby around, like including the time, you know, he did it down some stairs, I think, at Daly's place. But man, like, I don't know. It's a shame. Maybe there's something left for him to unlock as far as just the whole package. But he is 34, so he's actually a little younger than I thought. I actually thought he was around 40. And it's not a matter of, like, developing his skills or anything. I just feel like he hasn't put it all together. And then there was that really not great feud with Matt Hardy that seemingly lasted 18 months. You know, a big what if that felt like it didn't go right at all. One other health update I missed was Darby got hit by a bus. We should probably talk about that. Darby was in New York City to go see a Broadway play with Raymond Pettibon, the guy who designed the Black Flag logo. And Pettibon jaywalked in front of a bus. Darby was afraid that the bus was going to hit Pettibon, so he, like, kind of sped walk and shoved Pettibon out of the way, and Darby got hit in the face by a bus mirror that was going about 8 to 10 miles per hour, I think the article said, and it broke his nose. So Darby is just not having a great day, but he is saving Raven Pettibon's life. So, you know, sometimes you got to trade it off like that. Camille reportedly signed with AEW. I think she could be a very good signing. I'm interested to see how that goes. She feels like another person that'll slot in nicely in the top half of the women's division. And I don't know. It'll be interesting to see. I think, in my opinion, a real Haas in the division for the first time, you know, excluding Nyla Rose, for the first time since Jade Cargill left. And I think Camille is a better version of Jade Cargill. So that'll be fun to watch.
I am really, really excited about the Camille signing.
Yeah, it should be great. Hopefully,
give her a Goldberg streak. Give her a streak, but make her wait like a year to win a title, and just have her beat everybody, and then just get frustrated and be like, "I want the women's title," and then she wins it like Double or Nothing 24 or something, or 25. Like, I would do something like that, because she's starting to learn how to talk too, but she doesn't, like, she's not the greatest talker. She can work.
Yeah, she can. So I think that's a good pickup for sure. Matt Hardy said Jeff Hardy is cleared for returning, and also Rey Fénix and Roosh are both returning. Roosh had a little segment on Collision, and then another one, a pre-tape on Dynamite this week. So it looks like he's going as a solo act, essentially. CJ Perry is off the roster page. Interesting to see if that means that she's done or not. I just have not heard much about her outside of the separation news with Miro. And Taz has been told that he needs both his knees and his shoulders replaced. Gonna get a bionic Taz going here. Joint replacement Jones, but I digress. A couple more notes. Tony Khan said that last week's Dynamite's audio issues were only on TBS, which does not surprise me. And also, I mean, I watch on TBS, so please fix it. Good God. I think we may have already had this a few weeks ago, but Dave Meltzer had an actual list of CMLL people who can't be used due to visa issues presently by anyone in the U.S., including AEW. And that list is Mascara Dorada, Hechicero, Volador Jr., Blue Panther, Templario, Dulce Gardenia, Sangre Imperial, and Soberano Jr.
No, not Soberano.
I know, right? That's a really strong list of talent, and also Sangre Imperial. I don't know if I've ever actually seen him work. It's notable that, like, I don't think I've ever been recommended a Sangre Imperial much. But that's might just be me showing my ass. And that's it for the news and notes.
Yeah, you show your ass quite a bit, Fred.
I'm a professional idiot. What can I say? Any thoughts on the machine gun style news that we just went through?
Darby Allin getting hit by a bus is it, you know what it feels like? I couldn't climb Everest, so let's do something else. Like, obviously that's not what it was, but man, Darby getting hit by a bus is just peak Darby.
Oh yeah, that's extremely, like, that's the most Darby thing I think I can think of. It's, oh yeah, he's already got a broken foot and now he's getting hit in the face by a bus mirror. So I did not watch Collision this past week, but I did watch both Rampage and Dynamite from this past Wednesday. Tyler, what were your thoughts on those shows?
From this week?
Yes, from this week.
Man. Women's deathmatch wrestling continues to rule in this company.
Yes, it does.
Oh my goodness. Awesome match, Willow, Sky Blue. Look, you know what? We've been really down on Sky Blue. And I'm not saying that she's going to be this all-timer or she's going to be great. But I think we need to acknowledge that, hey, she's improving with this new gimmick. And she seems to be a lot more comfortable. And I think that's really noteworthy when we're having these conversations. We need to understand that, hey, these people take time. And it was really cool to see them absolutely crush it. I think the big thing that we need to talk about here, Fred, is did you at least take time to see the Kenny Omega angle?
Oh, I watched all of it. I watched all this week's stuff. The Omega angle, I think, was the best part of either show, frankly. I thought they nailed that really well. Kenny Omega did a fantastic job. The Elite are just really great jerk heels. and FDR making the run in to be the babyface saviors makes a lot of sense within that setting. And I definitely think we're setting up for an Anarchy in the Arena style match.
That brings us to a question from loyal listener South Dakota Jones, used to be a member of Voices of Wrestling, asked the question for the pod: book the teams for this year's Anarchy in the Arena at Double or Nothing. Cannot use anybody booked or clearly out/injured. And I think we need to have the conversation about Kenny Omega. Is he actually hurt? Because that is such a fascinating thing. If he's talking about how he might need to wear a colostomy bag and stuff. Look, I get it. I was potentially having to wear a colostomy bag for the rest of my life too. That is a pretty scary thing to hear about. But he's taking legit bumps to the stomach. If he's set to explode at any time and be filleted like that, which I am filleted like that, exactly how Kenny Omega described it, and it was emergency surgery, not planned surgery, so the scar is much, much worse, and I have like a second belly because of it. It makes finding shirts very hard, but I digress. I don't think Kenny Omega's hurt anymore. I think he's cleared.
I think so.
To me, that was clear.
And he wouldn't have been able to do a Snapdragon suplex like that. He wouldn't have been able to do the bump off the stretcher.
The chair shot.
You can work that chair shot. So, you know, I think that's manageable. That was the one that was least shocking to me, I reckon.
Fair. But in aggregate, they're all, you know, they all kind of tie together. It's like, holy crap, dude.
He was bumping around pretty good. He was not moving, which as I would expect a, you know, guy actively fighting off life-threatening diverticulitis would be, you know, moving around.
Yeah. I think he's back.
So it's traditionally 4-on-4, right? That's how they do it? Or is it 5-on-5?
4-on-4, 5-on-5. It's
just whatever they got. Okay.
Yep.
So it's obviously going to be the Elite. So it's going to be Jack Perry, the Young Bucks, and Okada. And that'll be against Omega and FTR. Definitely look like the guys that are being put in there, you know, along with Omega as baby faces. I don't foresee Swerve Strickland getting wrapped up in this. So the question is, does Adam Page return as a babyface? That'd be kind of weird after how things were going with his feud with Swerve Strickland, where I think Page really turned heel and was presented as such. But that's an option out there. After that, I feel like Will Ospreay is too wrapped up in his own stuff right now to really be a guy that you can pop over. I think in a different set of circumstances, maybe, but I think presently, I think Ospreay's got his own deal with the Callis family, and I think there's going to be a big turn there. Let's scroll through the roster real quick, but I don't have a good feeling for anyone else. You know what we need is Brandon Cutler to come out and get squashed by the Bucks.
Oh God, yes!
Like that Moxley killing Evil Uno match a year ago. We need something like that.
Okay. So I've been thinking about this. Okay. I think what could be really interesting is a Blackpool. Like it would have been awesome, Blackpool Combat Club versus CMLL, but so many of these guys can't come over.
Yeah.
I also thought maybe you could do Blackpool Combat Club versus House of Torture.
Okay.
You don't necessarily have a lot of the buildup like you've had with the other Anarchy in the Arena matches, but Moxley is facing Ren Narita, I believe, at Wrestling Dontaku for the title. And then they could attack him after Resurgence when he's likely to beat Shota Umino. And look, their shenanigans would be perfect for Anarchy in the Arena. And like, yeah, there's been a lot.
You may be the one person that would say that.
Well, look, it's a hardcore match. They can use the wrench. They can use the groat wire. They can do all that stuff. Mm-hmm. And you know what? It could work. But I think the problem is there wouldn't be the same heat.
No.
But I'm just trying to shoot.
I'm coming up with a list here. Give me a second to finish going through the roster.
It's a hard question, man.
Because okay, so I do assume it's going to be like the Elite versus, you know, the babyface Elite, but no Adam Page. I just get the feeling that Adam Page is a heel. So that leaves us with, I think, four options. There's Bryan Danielson, just because Bryan Danielson is willing to do whatever, and he could float over to the babyface side there. I think he is an option, but I don't think that is a strong connection. There is Eddie Kingston, who always seems to find himself opposite the Young Bucks in this situation.
In the hobby, it's not easy being a fan of ripping packs or repacks. We hype ourselves up thinking, maybe I can pull a Ken Griffey Jr. rookie card, but with zero transparency on available cards and hit rates, it's all just a shot in the dark. Until now. Introducing Slab Packs from ArenaClub.com, the only repack that provides real value, a complete view of all possible cards, and clear hit rates for each one. Now, when I buy Slab Packs at Arena Club, it finally feels like I know what I'm getting. I was able to open an Arena Club slab pack, and I'll be honest, it was a lot better than what you normally do. Say you go to a card show and there's a random innocuous brown bag of cards, and yeah, you can open it and look, it's going to be junk. You know what I mean? Like, you know what you're probably going to get in those. Maybe you find that fun, and sometimes I do. Sometimes I like just opening up cards and saying, ah, hey, look at some random cards or whatever. But if you're really in this game to find value and find particular cards, it sucks to have to buy these mystery packs, and it ends up being, you know, almost nothing, you know, nothing of value. Not with Arena Club. You get a display, again, of all available cards, hit rates, grading, so you know that when you're opening up the slab pack, you are going to get something valuable. You are getting something good. And Arena Club, in addition to having those great slab packs we just talked about, is also a marketplace for card collecting, buying, trading, selling, displaying, all that sort of stuff. But those Arena Club slab packs, man, they are revolutionizing the repack game with transparency. After your pulls are revealed, they'll immediately be placed in your vault for safekeeping or trading and selling, and you can have them officially graded by Arena Club as well. So again, sending these things off, it's going to be officially graded by Arena Club. And the Arena Club grading process is accurate, fast, and transparent, with full grade rationale provided and explanation of how your card was scored. So whether you're buying, selling, trading, or displaying, Arena Club is the card collecting platform that you have to check out. So right now, I've got a special offer here for Voices of Wrestling Network listeners. You can get 10% off of your first purchase by going to arenaclub.com/VOWnet. Again, that's arenaclub.com/VOWnet. Now, that's a crazy offer. That's 10% off a $400 slab pack. $40 off right there. 10% off your first purchase. No matter what that purchase is, 10% off. Off. Again, that's arenaclub.com/VOWnet, arenaclub.com/VOWnet for 10% off your first purchase on Arena Club. And we thank them for sponsoring the Voices of Wrestling Podcast Network. What's going on, guys? This is Rich from the Flagship Podcast here on the Voices of Wrestling Podcast Network. If I could have a moment of your time, I'd like to tell you about one of our sponsors, Eufy Video Lock. Eufy Video Lock is a smart lock, a 2K camera, and a doorbell, all 3-in-1, offering you triple security. So you can have everything in one device rather than installing many pieces on your front door. But it's not just for security. The Eufy Video Lock is also for convenience. No more concerns about losing keys, and you can assign passwords to your family members and see them coming back home via the integrated cameras. Some other great features we love about the Eufy Video Lock is it is easy to install and set up with just a Phillips screwdriver, no drilling required. Keyless entry, no more fumbling for keys when your hands are full. You never have to worry about kids losing keys or passing among renters. You also have 0.3 second fingerprint recognition, and 1 second unlocking. Again, 0.3 seconds, it's going to recognize your fingerprints, and in 1 second, it's going to unlock. And with the AI self-learning chip embedded, the more you use it, the more accurate it will be. Also, no battery anxiety. You have a rechargeable battery in there that could last around 4 months, and you will get a low battery notification before it runs out. Passcode unlocking, a remote control with a 2K clear sight, see who's at your door, and control from anywhere through the Eufy app. With enhanced night vision, you can have optimized view even in the evening. You can also secure your package delivery by view and two-way audio. And then best of all, no monthly fee. A bunch of other brands out there are going to charge you a monthly fee. You have your recordings locally, and you never have to pay for storage. Customer service, Eufy's got you handled as well. They are on standby for you 24/7, so you can enjoy a worry-free experience with an 18-month warranty, all backed by their professional customer service team. Contact them anytime by telephone, email, or live chat. Personally, as a homeowner, I love my Eufy video lock. I have the ability to see what's going on when I'm not home, when packages has arrived, and really the thing I love the most about it, the ease of being able to lock and unlock my doors without having to fumble with my keys, reach in my pocket, or wait, no, crap, they're in my backpack, all that sort of stuff. All this is happening while my dogs are barking at me. You know what? Not anymore with the Eufy video lock. I touch it. 0.3 second fingerprint recognition, 1 second, door is unlocked. Much, much easier. So if you want to jump on board with Eufy Video Lock, search Eufy Video Lock. That is E-U-F-Y Video Lock. Again, that's Eufy Video Lock, E-U-F-Y Video Lock, or visit eufyofficial.com/videolock to see how you can gain complete control of your door.
So, you know, it says the baby face who gets really annoyed with the Young Bucks. It feels like an easy pickup. The other guys I would bring up are Ricky Starks, who's just kind of floating out in the ether right now.
Is he hurt?
I don't think he was, but I thought he got banged up in a match, but then was like, oh, I'm okay. So I'm assuming that he's okay. Maybe I am wrong there.
Well, yeah, because they it was that match against Top Flight in the tag team tournament.
Yeah.
And
his team's done because Big Bill has now moved over to Jericho.
That's kind of like, why I'm wondering if he's like selling an injury or something, because yeah.
It could be. But the other person, I think actually maybe the number one person in the clubhouse for that spot is Daniel Garcia. Because he has previously been buddies on screen with FTR. He's obviously someone that they are actively trying to push up the card to be a big star. Look at the whole, C2 tournament and all that stuff. I think it might be him. If we're doing 4-4, I think that would be my pick. Because he'd be able to go in that match. He'd be a good fit. I think he's a better fit than Ricky Starks because, you know, nothing wrong with Ricky Starks. Don't take that as a knock on him, but he has shown a proclivity for being safe when he's wrestling, which is nice. Don't get me wrong. That's a good thing to have. But, you know, in the Anarchy in the Arena style matches, it's these wild brawls and a lot of assumed big bumps and all that. So, you know, that doesn't seem very Starks-like, but maybe, you know, it doesn't necessarily mean he has to be the one taking the big bumps. I just go back to that ladder match he was in where he was obviously like, I'm not getting involved with that ladder. That's not what I'm here for. And that still makes me laugh to go back and think about it. I do think it's Daniel Garcia is probably the number one pick, I think.
Yeah, I think. Man. I'm really intrigued to see if they do an Anarchy in the Arena, because I know Tony Khan has talked about wanting to have like a special match like every year, Double or Nothing. And an issue with Stadium Stampede. But once the pandemic was over, okay, we don't need to have that kind of, not necessarily smoke and mirrors, but have so much of that
chaos
and pre-shot and then spill over into the arena because we're finally getting fans back. It's normal life. So
I think they're going to do the Anarchy in the Arena, and it's going to be an Elite versus other people.
The Okada in an Anarchy in the Arena match.
The Stinger the Stinger Squadron. Yeah, I know Okada in this setting is going to be fascinating. I have no reason to believe that he would not succeed, by the way, because he's just killing it as a you know, as a guy on American TV, like he just fits like a glove. So
it's truly amazing that we had real questions about Okada as somebody who can he translate? Can he?
Right. And from day one, it's been apparent that yes, that is not a problem. Next question, please. Very exciting. But yeah, that's it. That's I think that's the way they should go. I love that angle. It was really good.
It was very good. I want to talk a little bit more about this angle and then last week's angle. We need to apologize to Jack Perry.
Oh, he's ready to be a star.
I don't know what happened to him over the course of the last 6 months. I don't know what New Japan did to fix him, him to this point. I don't know what happened between All In and his re-debut at Dynasty. Holy crap. He is a star. He's got it. A switch flipped somewhere in him, and Tony Khan has talked about him being a pillar, and like MJF, yeah, but he's got something to prove coming off of that pretty poor end of his title run
and the injury and all that.
Sammy Guevara, no.
I think the sun has set on Sammy Guevara, AEW main eventer, but you know, I don't know. I really don't know.
Darby Allin.
Yes,
he is like your upper mid card pillar. I think you're going to eventually have him win the big belt, and it's going to be a great moment. And then he should lose it in 30 days.
Yeah, basically. Yeah, he seems like a great chaser. Jack Perry, I will tell you when it happened. It had nothing to do with New Japan. It was in the month before All In, when he turned heel and was doing that feud with Hook. Like at that point, it was like, oh no, this is setting him up to be like that guy, you know, to be a top level guy. And it turns out that he's just a much better heel than face. And, it he started to really click, going up to CM Punk, going up to All In. And then it's a damn shame the CM Punk thing happened, because like it's a real glass, cry me a river. Like as funny as that is and all that, you know, in hindsight, like that is a great AEW style heel thing, like an ad lib, you know, it fits right into the company. And, you know, I thought he was really unlocking something there. And instead of watching him continue to do it and figure it out, he went away and kind of figured it out on his own while he was sent away from the company and all that. And now he's back and it's like, no, he's 100%. Like the transformation is complete and he's ready to go as a main eventer.
Yeah, it's...
He's a great scumbag.
Oh, he's phenomenal, man.
Just the worst. I love
he
it.
Was he was so good in when they pulled the mask off and he just had that smirk.
Oh, the smirk. Yes,
it was perfect. And then he's hugging Tony Khan and then he just looks at the hard cam smirk. And this past week, he was so good with the little nuances with the chair and attacking Kenny. Like, I thought he was the best part of the angle. And you had Okada, and you had Omega, and the Young Bucks, and FTR. All the stars were out.
All the stars.
And I thought Perry was the best part of that. And
I think Omega sold it really well. It would be my pick that it was Omega.
Oh, hold on. This isn't anything bad about any of those guys.
No, not at all.
Impressed with Jack Perry. Oh,
yeah, Perry came off really well. I'm just saying that if I had to pick number one, it'd be Omega, and then it'd be Perry. Just
you are a coward, sir. That's not coward. It's a strong
stance. How dare you? How dare you?
Hey, we are a strong style show, Fred. And by strong style, I mean All Elite Wrestling.
I'm a strong boy.
Look, it was great.
Yeah, it was a great angle.
Now let's talk about the future of Omega and Okada.
Okay. Oh God, I'm just waiting. There's going to be an amazing pay per view match this year.
Is this All In? They do it for the first time outside of Japan at Wembley? Now, it won't be the main event, which AEW has never shied away from having a massive match in the undercard.
Yeah.
But
I would say that this, oh man, that's a good question.
I feel like they're going to do it at All In because you have a chance. Like, it's probably going to be Ospreay versus Swerve. And once they announce Ospreay as the title challenger, my guess is it sells 5,000 to 10,000 tickets based on that alone, because you're going to get to see Ospreay in the main event go absolutely bonkers and get coronated. That's going to be a special moment for the British wrestling fans.
And they've got to do that this year.
Yeah.
Who
saw Ospreay try to keep the scene alive with every fiber of his being after speaking out.
Yes.
And
yeah, the pandemic and the NXT UK raids and all that.
Yeah. I think Tony Khan is not going to miss an opportunity to put Omega Okada, which in itself could sell 5,000 to 10,000 tickets just by being announced, in front of potentially 80,000 to 90,000 people.
Yeah, it's because, tempting, man. It's like, real tempting.
They only had one Tokyo Dome match.
Mm-hmm.
That Tokyo Dome match sold 26,000 tickets, if I'm remembering correctly off the top of my head, which at the time was like the biggest of the Bushiroad era, the biggest since Okada came into the company and started that golden period for New Japan. Mm-hmm. Like, they were slowly building back up, because remember, pro wrestling was kind of dead for around a 5 to 8 year period because of the rise of like K1 and Pride and MMA. And then you had a lot of shoot fighting. Yeah. Like, traditional pro wrestling kind of died for a little bit, and they were really bringing it back. So 26,000 in January 4th, 2017, it's a really good number. Tony Khan's going to want to obliterate that. He's not going to put this in.
Can he get higher than that? Like, much higher though? I mean,
if your top two matches, like, we should check if you can, Fred, search WrestleTix and see if he's got an update on All In, because with the pre-sale, I think they sold about 40,000. Yeah. Now that pre-sale was around New Year's.
Physically, does that building hold that like much more?
I think that building, if you have no stage and you have the floor, I think you can get 110. You might be able to get more than that, because I want to say I've heard numbers of like 130, 140 for like Live Aid.
Yeah. So, okay, All In is currently set up for this year for 50,708. Last year, let's see. That's
We need to mention though, Fred, they set up for X amount, and then as they sell more tickets, they open up more sections.
Yes they do,
because you don't want to have everything wide open for something like this and then have so many scattered open seats, because that aesthetically looks like crap. And then, like, they're gonna have certain sections open, and they're gonna continue to, they're basically gonna open upper decks as they sell more tickets.
And it looks like last year the setup, I think, maxed out at 85,000. So we do expect it to go up. I'm going to do another Google real quick.
We got to remember, too, that how many tickets have they sold, though, or have been distributed?
Presently?
Yeah, 45,000?
Something like that. Hold on, I had that.
Yeah, you had it. That's why I'm like...
40,937, which is still damn good.
Yeah, I mean, the novelty's gone. The second you announce Ospreay as a challenger and then potentially announce Omega Okada, that's going to sell tickets, because people will want to travel to go see those matches.
So here's go ahead. I'm sorry.
Like, you're going in blind, and you've still sold 41,000 tickets based off of last year, which, let's be honest, last year's show kind of felt disappointing. The atmosphere was incredible, but the in-ring was like...
I thought it was just really the main event that kind of...
But you didn't get that five-star match. You got a bunch of good to really good, but nothing was great.
And
that's not to say nobody tried. It just didn't materialize.
So here's the difficulty, I think, because last year they set up for 85,000. Wikipedia, the most honest source on the internet, but you know, it's what we got, says its capacity for association football, rugby union, rugby league, and boxing is 90,000. So there's really not much left to go up on there. So I think that's important to note. You are correct. The last year's all-in was actually kind of an underwhelming card. I had slotted something higher than I guess I had. I think I topped out at 4.5 on that for Stadium Stampede. So,
the card wasn't underwhelming. The performances were, and it wasn't like they didn't try. It just didn't happen. And I think we've been so spoiled with some of these pay-per-views that when it doesn't happen, it kind of leaves you feeling down when it's still a really, really good show. It also, got ruined by MJF and Adam Cole basically saying, our friendship's more important than the title. You fools, you're in professional wrestling.
Yeah, that did not work. I think we can all agree on that in hindsight, at least the AEW audience. I think the WWE, dilettantes who wanted to, pop over, like they're like, oh, this looks good. And I've there's this theory that I did not create but I've fully stolen it from a bunch of people. I think that basically once you start hearing from like Raj Geary and those people, people the pro WWE mindset, to be clear, once they start saying, oh, AEW is very good right now, then that means AEW is actually bad. and when they're like, oh, AEW is at the worst it's ever been, they're like, AEW is the best it's ever been right now. That's just really how it seems to align with my view on it. I'm going to ask you another big picture question. I don't think we're going to get too far into this week's Dynamite. There is one thing I want to bring up from that, though. For a while, I was keeping ourselves updated on the Turkey fanship. I'm an intelligent person. God.
Are we still number one in the country of Turkey, Fred?
Now, we haven't put out a podcast in like 10 days, so these charts are a little behind, right? But it looks like we peaked at number 4 for Turkey. So our Turks are abandoning us in droves, obviously. But there is a new challenger. I still obviously appreciate the support from all our listeners, blah, blah, blah. But our new challenger, India, we had on April 27th, which I think was several days after we released the last episode.
Just 2 days.
Okay.
So we released it on the 25th.
Well, enough where it's notable that we had the number 2 wrestling podcast in the country of India. So it's time to try to monetize that country. And, everyone else has failed, but maybe it'll work for us.
It's
very cool to see that.
One other thing that we need to do here, Fred, is I'm actually going to pull it up because I want to make sure I get this right.
Okay.
There was an article, I believe it was on Cultaholic.
Okay.
Or no, it was on What Culture.
What Culture?
By Michael Sidgwick, titled AEW's Huge Fuck You to WWE and Why It Will Win.
Okay.
And it's about 1500 words about why AEW is going to win and why Paul Levesque is failing. High recommend that everybody go out and read this. It's basically talks about Levesque's rise to his spot in power, and this line is phenomenal. And it's talking about like the last NXT show in 2019, where you only had really 3 WWE originals: Baszler, the Velveteen Dream, and Bianca Belair on the card. You take one look at that card, and the idea that he wouldn't want to sign Will Ospreay is preposterous. Had New Japan not awarded Ospreay a contract after just one match, Levesque would have put the NXT title on Ospreay quicker than he moved on from China.
Wow.
it's an incredible piece, and it's honest. It's really, really well done, and I'm not going to spoil any more about it, but it's essentially how AEW is building what Triple H actually wanted, and now he can't do it because Triple H wanted to be the smark.
Yeah.
He wanted to be the guy that the Smarks all loved, and he had that with NXT for a while, and then he kind of lost it. And then how NXT is really fleeting, and now AEW is kind of taking over. It's just, it's really good. High recommend.
Interesting. I don't think there's any chance AEW is passing WWE in the next 5 years, but just as a general thing. But I think AEW is very able to put itself in a very good spot, and I think they are. And as soon as, you know, that, like, he does bring up the, I've got it pulled up right now. It looks like that they pulled up, you know, he does bring up how they got renegotiated twice with Turner, which was, you know, really the real wins. And I think that's very accurate. I wanted to ask you about two other things. One, this will be a quick discussion, but on the opening match for this week's Dynamite, Adam Copeland and Buddy Matthews. What did you give that match?
Four. I loved it.
You gave that 4 stars?
I thought it was great.
I hated that match. I did not care for that match. Yes. I thought this would, yeah, because I thought I saw you say that it was a 4-star match, and I was like, no, it's not. And I went 1 star on it. I actively hated it.
Oh. And
yeah. Ooh. So we gotta have this out.
You whore. Explain yourself.
I will explain myself happily. I thought it was a really super weird match. And this crowd was... Winnipeg was a really weird crowd this year, this time around, where they just sounded really dead for everything from the start of the show. They kind of woke up about halfway through, about 9 p.m., and started to be like a normal AEW crowd. And it wasn't like all they're too small kind of thing. Like, they just were not very loud. You know, they weren't loud for the opening segment, which was a surprise because it had Swerve come out, and he's usually pretty over. And then Christian comes out, and he's a good heel. He's over. And they just didn't get much of a response. And then you had the Adam Copeland Buddy Matthews match. And I swear, large chunks of that match, you could have heard a pin drop in that arena. And it was just deadly silent. It was like a crypt in their points. And then they basically worked a Randy Orton match with a lot of chin locks and stuff for a while. And then they had that really weird faked injury with Buddy Matthews dying from a double cross body spot. But then he still does sunset flip power bombs and stuff. And it's like, that doesn't make any sense. And Adam Copeland hits a DDT, his impaler DDT off the top rope, but he does the slow cover to get, you know, so they can be like, oh yeah, it's a 2 count. And it's just like, why did we do this? The teasing of a time limit draw in this match was completely unnecessary. And then I especially hated the post-match angle, because now we have the lore of the Mist come into play. And this is not what I want or care about. I don't care very much for this at all. And yeah, I thought it was kind of really boring. It was a well-worked match that I did not care about at all, with very weird creative decisions in it, and I didn't care for it. I you know, it's really hard to have like a 2.5-star 25-minute match. You know, I feel like once you get to that point, it's either a good match or it's a bad match. It's really hard to have an average 25-minute match. And that was kind of my take on it.
Ah, I thought it was good. Obviously, it wasn't a flawless match. I still thought that they just beat the hell out of each other. And I think this is just Copeland wanting to wrestle a bunch of dudes that he never really got to wrestle. I don't think he ever got to wrestle Big Match Buddy when he was on that 205 Live run.
It's not Big Match anymore.
Look, you're just a hater, Fred. I thought this was good. I thought this was fun. I enjoyed myself. Now, the Mist stuff, that's not a part of the match. So I'm going to fight you on that. If you hate the Mist stuff, that's fine.
I'm just adding that on there. I thought it was a really weird match without it. And then we had that, the post-match, which I don't really bake it into the rating, I guess. But like, I don't know. The match had bad vibes, and the vibes got worse quickly.
You have bad vibes.
No, how dare you.
I enjoyed it. I don't know what else to say. I thought it was good. I mean, I think we all know I'm not a overrater, but I'm a little generous. If I enjoy something, I'm going to give it a higher rating. Sure. Like, I wouldn't say I'm less objective, but I let how much joy I have watching a match influence the star ratings maybe a little more than other people, which I think is a fine way to grade.
I think your scale is fine. I did not feel joy during this match. I felt very much the opposite of joy, and didn't work for me, brother.
Speaking of brother, did you see Hulk Hogan on the 700 Club?
Somebody made a thread on Twitter of all the lies he said on there. I'm going to have to find that real quick.
You know that Andre Giant could not use a knife and the fork because he weighed 600 pounds?
God, that was one of them. He just amazing lies. Just would not. Oh yeah, he got a post-mortem voicemail from Roddy Piper. Amazing. Jeez, I can't find the thread that I saw the lies in, but it was very, very ridiculous. I had one more thing that I thought we should discuss before we wrapped up the show.
Okay.
Which is Adam Copeland, or not Adam Copeland, shit. Christian Cage, world title challenger against Swerve Strickland. And just kind of Swerve in his first week as champion. What do you think about that challenger? How do you think they've presented Swerve so far? And I don't know, just kind of thoughts on those subjects.
Man, I love that it's Christian. I think this is a perfect first world title challenger for him. I think they're going to do a great job. I think people underrate the match at All Out that he had with Kenny Omega back in 2021, because it was after that cage match. It was after CM Punk returned and wrestled Darby Allin. And then right afterwards, you got the debuts of Adam Cole and Bryan Danielson. For me, that match was like 4.25 plus. I thought it was really good. And with Christian's character right now, hell yeah. And you have the stuff baked in with the Mogul Embassy, how Swerve went up and beat the piss out of Nick Wayne. And now Nick Wayne is with Christian, and Christian wants retribution for his son. I think they tied it in really well. I think this is something great to do with Christian, get him away from Adam Copeland. And Christian is just going to continue to be great. I think his performance has really been incredible. It makes sense that he's a world title challenger because of how good he's been in this company. And even from a win-loss perspective, you could argue that. You can argue Will Ospreay. Well, Ospreay's been in the company for a cup of coffee, essentially.
Yeah, right, right.
And you've got John Moxley, he's got the IWGP world title. Claudio is kind of, he's not pushed well enough to be a world champion challenger. I think this works. I think it works really well. And there's going to be stuff like Anarchy in the Arena. And I think people are so into Christian. You can argue Christian's the most overact in this company other than Will Ospreay. I think this works great. Now, will they deliver a big match? I think Swerve's gotta work really hard because Christian's gonna. But that Christian Darby match from
I have no concerns about the match quality. Let's be clear here.
Well, from WrestleDream, I gave that 4.75. I thought that was incredible.
Christian goes all out in his big matches, and that's not a concern I have.
Yeah. But the concern is for me with Swerve, because he's in this new position, and I'm not even saying you should be concerned, because he's never been a world champion before. How is he going to handle himself? How is the pressure going to get to him? Is he going to mount? Is he going to put too much on himself and then deliver a subpar match? These are real possibilities. Sure. I'm not saying they're going to happen. I'm not even predicting them to happen. But until we see it, it is an unknown variable. And that unknown variable needs to be solved before we can feel 100% confident.
Yeah. See, here's my point, or my thought on it, is that I'm just not sure that Christian's as big of a name as you would want in Swerve's first defense. I think ideally you'd have him beating one of the very top guys in the company, and Christian's very high up the card, let's not kid ourselves, he's a star, but he's not there's names on here that would be better for him to be beating in his first defense, but all those names are people that are wrapped up in other storylines where mm-hmm. it doesn't work out with the current logistics. Like, obviously, it would do wonders for Swerve if he were to beat Kazuchika Okada straight up in a singles match right now. But that's 100% the wrong time for it. You know, Okada's off doing the different storyline, and he is, you know, he's too new, I think, to come in and lose already. You know, you go on down through the roster. Malakai Black, I'm not sure, is a bigger star. You know, like Kenny Omega would be a great feather in the cap, but he's been out hurt or ill. So not a great choice there. Orange Cassidy, I'm not sure. It feels like more of a mid-carder day by day. Yeah, I just, like, I don't know that, you know, there's anyone really obvious for him to, you know, and it's like Will Ospreay, you know, they're not going to have him in that role because he's obviously, it's pretty apparent that he's like the next guy, right? So I don't know. It feels like that ideally you'd have Swerve beat someone bigger, but I don't think they have anyone bigger that can be put in that spot right now. And, you know, that's kind of, you know, like maybe Adam Cole, but that doesn't really fit the Adam Cole storyline right now either. And also he's still out, I think, it seems like. So I don't know. It feels to me, you know, there's when they were doing less pay-per-views, it feels to me like, you know, the big dynamite in between the two pay-per-views main event, you know, which they would build to for weeks and weeks. It feels like a really good one of those, but not a great pay-per-view main event. And the last pay-per-view, you know, buys were down significantly from the Sting retirement show, which is not a surprise. But I mean, it was also down like fairly noticeably from the previous AEW shows as well. And, you know, I think that that's not a big surprise. You're kind of taking a bump when you're like, all right, we're going to spend some shows getting Sora Strickland over as a main eventer. I just think that part of that should be him beating a bigger name. But also, Chris Jericho has lost too many matches to be that guy right now. Bryan Danielson is kind of a baby face and also has arguably lost too many matches to be that guy right now. So it feels like, yeah, Christian's like as good of a pick as you have, but it's not ideal. It's kind of my take.
I think unideal is a good way to frame it, but I'm still really excited about it. I'm still going to argue he's a great pick because at least there's history.
He's and probably the best pick that they could reasonably make right now. I just, you know, like, all I'm trying to say is like if it's you know, defense one for a new champ, a guy that you've never really had as that level champ, it'd be great to have him be like the next tier up a guy in that first defense. Like Christian's on that second tier, I guess, is what I'm trying to say, as a draw in terms of credibility. And there's nothing wrong with where he is. I mean, he's like a borderline main eventer, but I just think you'd rather it be like a true, like, core main eventer guy.
Yeah, this is one of the flaws in Tony Khan's booking.
Yeah. It's just a weird spot, I think. It's more, you know, just a quirk, I think, of the calendar and where everyone is right now. And, you know, it feels like the real main event storyline is the Elite right now. And that's, you know, I don't know if that's a good or bad thing. It's just the truth of the matter. So, yeah, I think that's really all I have to talk about this week. I thought Willow Nightingale, Sky Blue had a damn good match. I gave it 4. It may have actually been like more of a 3.75, but when you're doing, you know, it's like I you know, the Dr. Bomb off the apron through the barbed wire board, I think, was enough to push it up for me.
God, that
was a 6 spot.
Turn the TBS title into a women's deathmatch title, please. Like, I mean, for real.
Yeah, they got a division, you know. I'd bring back the bunny for it because that was the best stuff she ever did was the hardcore matches. I don't know, you got any other big thoughts coming off this show, you know, as we kind of are in the awkward in between for pay-per-views?
No, I think we have from the time of recording, we have 23 days till Double or Nothing, so we have 4 collisions and 3 dynamites to build to this card, and I don't think they have a ton of work to do, but they don't have no work to do. Yeah. And I'm interested to see how they get there, because how they get there is going to be really interesting to how successful the show is going to be, because we heard Dynasty numbers were a little down. I think that came from Meltzer. I think kind of the projecteds initially were around 100,000.
Now, there's a possibility that his numbers are off because I think they went with more platforms for online sales.
Yep.
But
Thriller, for the first time, was you were able to buy that in the United States. So that was a big one. You could still do it on BR Live, traditional cable and satellite providers. I think more is good.
Yeah, yeah, it is. But I think it's also going to be harder for Dave to have accurate predictions based off of that. Yeah. But that said, I do fully expect those numbers to be down from the previous several pay-per-views. Yeah, he said, as of the same number of days out, Dynasty is 33.6% down from Revolution, 27.5% down from World's End. I would say that World's End is the more concerning of those, I believe. Just because that felt like, you know, kind of a close to baseline. And Dave is saying that right now, I'd say 117,000 to 126,000 is a fair range for Dynasty. And that feels like less disastrous of a number. Like if it was just 100, like that feels like really bad, you know, 100,000. 117 to 126 is like not great. You know, let's not be, you know, fooling ourselves. But it's also not fantastic. You know, I wouldn't exactly be riding home to Mama and Papa Khan with those numbers, but that's just, you know, anyways, you want to tell them about Redbubble, because we don't do this, we never do good podcast business, you know, on our shows. We're just always like, all right, well, we got to go now, bye.
Redbubble, is that is that like the donation thing?
Yeah, the
I'm so good at
that. I didn't know it was called Redbubble.
I thought it was Red Bull.
It's Red Circle, you buffoon. Is it
Red Circle?
It's Red, right, Circle. Red I'm Circle. Like, wait, they have a specific name? No. Yeah,
Redbubble is a different thing. Okay.
If you guys love the show and want to donate to the show, there is a link in the show notes, and you can also go on our Red Circle page. Or just search Red Circle, the Good, the Bad, and the Hungy. And there's a link there to do it as well. It's just an easy way to support the show, where obviously liking, giving us 5-star review and writing a review also helps the show a ton. We want to be number one in Turkey again, and that's going to be a really easy way to do so. And some people like to donate financially to help us out to continue to give you guys the show. And donation is never expected and always appreciated. So check the show notes or our Red Circle page, and you'll be able to do that. Otherwise, just a simple 5-star review and a quick writing is like, oh, Tyler's awesome and Fred sucks for having that Copeland and Buddy Murphy match at 1-star.
Fair enough.
Or just, you know, tell us what you like to eat. Tell us your favorite food in the review. I do this as a bit on my show, The Real Forno Show, where we talk Minnesota Vikings and we talk about food a lot. And it's kind of become a reoccurring bit that we just all of a sudden we'll just start talking about food. And I love it. Absolutely love it.
We get our shows put up on the YouTubes. You can find us on the Voices of Wrestling page. We're on all the major podcast providers. Leave a rating and a positive comment is great. Of course, you can also tell your friends, tell your wrestling buddies if they like AEW to listen to us. Because as much as people like to push the we got to make the algorithm happy with the ratings and all that, which we do. I for one welcome our robot overlords. we also, like the most effective thing is really to just tell a friend, like, hey, I like this show. You like AEW? It's about AEW. You should check it out. You can always email us comments at hungiepod, HUNGEEPOD @gmail.com. And we have our own channel on the Voices of Wrestling Discord server, which I periodically remember exists. Not so much over the past couple of weeks, Tyler. And I think we actually did proper plugs outside of me saying Red Bubble instead of Red Circle, which is what it is, Red Circle. Such an idiot. You got any exciting Viking stuff going on?
We have an official team page coming at the Sporting News. Otherwise, you can find all my stuff. Just search Tyler Fornes Sporting News, and you'll be able to find everything. my Vikings YouTube channel, Vikings First and Skull. We're at almost 3,800 subscribers, being around for just 14 months. So we're really proud of that. And a lot of really good discussion around the Minnesota Vikings, around the NFL draft, around this team and the direction that they're going. It's very fascinating on so many levels. And I'm really excited to kind of see what that continues to look like. And yeah, that's it for the show. Like, subscribe, give us a 5-star review. Feel free to donate to the show if you think that we are worthy of that kind of reward. And I wish you all a great weekend. And yeah, that's it. Bye.
Yeah, take care. Have a good one, everyone. Bye-bye.
Hi, I'm Case Lowe, co-host of the Open the Voice Gate podcast. The one question I'm constantly asked when it comes to Dragon Gate is, how do I get into the promotion? Well, stop asking and start listening to the Open the Voice Gate podcast, released every Wednesday on the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. For exclusive news and show reviews, look no further than the leader in Dragon Gate coverage, Open the Voice Gate.